joining us today. We're so grateful for you to be with us. Man, that's, yeah, all right, now I'm louder. That's great. I can tone it down a little bit. Great, awesome. We pray, though, moms or potential moms, that you feel loved, that you feel welcomed, that you feel known this morning. And we want to honor not just moms, but all ladies today through service. I think that one of the primary ways, matter of fact, I know, one of the primary ways the Bible depicts manhood and womanhood is through sacrificial service, right? And what often happens in our culture today is that is taken on by the woman solely, usually in a relationship or in a family. Women give everything, every single thing, sacrificially to everybody, all the time, it feels like. At least that's from my wife's perspective and what I see in her life. So I think it would maybe translate to you as well. But biblically, that sacrificial love is primarily the man's responsibility in the relationship. Too often, though, we give that up and let y'all take it on. But today, we're flipping the tables around, in some ways literally, where we're going to be serving you today. So we're going to be taking time here in a little bit to a couple of guys are going to go out. They're going to flip some pancakes this morning, and they're going to have some kids later. They're going to help serve it to everyone today. There is going to be an awesome pancake Mother's Day experience, and I just can't wait to be able to share that with you as guys get to lovingly love on you, serve you today as we're called to do. Also, it is, as you've just seen, Compassion Sunday. I'm super excited about that. We haven't done one of these in a couple of years, and we wanted to make sure that we took time to do that today. You've got a glimpse in the video, but if you're unaware of what Compassion International is, let me give you just a brief rundown. It's a Christ-focused organization. It's got centers all over the world, and they provide food, education, gifts, and most importantly, life with Jesus to children who would never have the opportunity otherwise. This is done through child sponsorship, which I think is one of the coolest things about this experience, meaning that you give money each month to clothe, to feed, to educate, and to give the gift of the gospel to a specific child. All right, you can give to a bunch of organizations that help children around the world, but you're sponsoring one specific child and seeing them through their entire life if you choose to go that far. And this is just more than financial support. This is an opportunity to get to know them because you get to write letters back and forth. You get to pray for them. You can even visit them in the center they're at if you like. If it's a situation you find yourself in, you can definitely do that. It's just an amazing experience. My wife and I have sponsored a child for over 19 years from Compassion International. We started whenever we had our first son, Jaden, who's in the back, and as soon as we had him, we said, man, we need to get a compassion child. We saw a video like this. We were at a church experience, and we were like, man, I really want to get involved in that. So since we had one of our own, we said, man, let's sponsor a child through Compassion. And that was a little girl in Haiti who went through a program, and she graduated that program. We sponsored her through, she was 18 or 19 years old, and she went on and did some amazing things, and we took another child on from Haiti, and we had another boy who was in India, and we've just continued to try to bless as many as we possibly can over the years, and it's just an incredible life-changing blessing, not just for them, but also I found for our family and for us as we've been through this process. So if you'd like to sponsor a child today, I pray that you do it as a God-centered decision. Don't do it because you feel guilted. Don't do it because, oh man, it'd be nice to help a child. No, do it because God is leading you in that direction. And if he is, I encourage you to go to the table in the cafe today as we're going through the experience, especially after we're done and you're getting food. Check out that table. There's child sponsorship packets on the table. And each packet represents, again, one specific child. That's not a potential child. That's the actual one that you will be sponsoring that is waiting right now to have a sponsor at this very moment, all right? So I highly encourage you to at least look. We never want to push it. If you want to do it, but pray that it is led by God to do so, feel free. If you're not sure, you can take some information home. You can go home. You can review it. You can look at it and see if it's a good fit for you, and then you can make a decision. But just know that's there. It's going to be there for a couple of weeks, just so we know it's available week after week as we do this, all right? Awesome. This Compassion video, Compassion Sunday, Mother's Day, is a great way to also get us thinking about the next part of our Elijah series. You saw the bumper video just a second ago. We started last week looking at this man of God named Elijah and how God was preparing him from some really incredible things. And this week, we're going to see how his life takes this unexpected twist, this unexpected direction. So ladies, this morning, if you've ever felt at the end of your rope in your life, if you feel like maybe some days I'm just barely hanging on, I'm here this morning, but that's all I am. I'm just physically present in the room. We're going to see a lady who is just like that in our text today. If you've ever struggled maybe to take care of your family, maybe you don't even know how you're going to pay a bill to help your child through a difficult time, we're going to see someone in that exact situation today. If you've ever wondered if God knows or even cares what you're going through, we're going to see how God uses his perfect timing and plan to meet you exactly where you are just when you need him. Now, if you remember from last week, we said that God sent Elijah to a brook called Kereth, right? It was a place that means cut off or cut down, right? And God uses this time to prepare and to humble Elijah for what was ahead. We also read where God pronounced a drought, right? He came in and told Elijah to go to King Ahab and you're going to pronounce a drought over the whole land. That really was more than just a weather prediction, like we said. It was this declaration of war against who they worshiped, this God called Baal. And so we left off by that brook with Elijah camping by that brook, and it starts to dry up, and Elijah's left wondering, well, what now? What do we do now? It wouldn't take long to find out, though. And it came as he's called to a place that's completely unexpected in his life. So I want you to jump back in time with me, kids and adults and everybody here. I like us to use our imaginations. This helps me as I'm reading the text. It's not a dry text. It's something that invites you into the story. So I want to encourage you this morning to jump into me, to this place, this scene where we're in this place of gods and kings, right? We're in this place of prophets and widows. We're in this scene and picture of war and famine. And I want us to see how God works in all these situations to do some pretty remarkable and miraculous things. We're going to start 1 Kings chapter 17, verses 8 and 9. We're going to walk through some of this text together this morning and dive in and see how it helps and applies to us too. 1 Kings 17, 8 and 9 says, "Then the word of the Lord came to him," being Elijah, "and said, 'Arise and go to Zarephath, which belongs to Sidon, and dwell there. Behold, I've commanded a widow there to feed you.'" So here's Elijah. Remember, let's remember from last week, if you weren't here, let's just get into this picture. He was by this brook. It starts to dry up. He's being fed by ravens morning and night, bread and meat. And now he gets some strange instructions. He's called to leave that to go to a town called Zarephath, whose name means refining. As a matter of fact, we got a picture up here for you. It's going to be thrown on the screen. It's just a kind of general representation of the area and where we're talking about when we're talking about these names. Because I could be talking about the Wizard of Oz. You wouldn't know any better, right? Here, this is a literal place right here. And so he'll make sure you know where it's at. So he had a pretty long journey, a few days hike that he had to make from a place that was close to his home, that he was comfortable with, who was existing by what God was providing. But now he's called to go somewhere completely different. He's got to walk not to a land of plenty, not to a place that's comfortable where everybody knew him and could support him, not to a place where everybody worshiped the same God that he worshiped, but go right into the middle of Baal-worshipping territory, right into enemy territory. He's got to travel up to this foreign country where they don't worship Yahweh. They worship a completely other God. And right off the bat, Elijah's like, "What? You want me to go? You want me to go where? You want me to do what? Do you know who these people are, right? You know where you're sending me? These people are heathens, right? These people are barbaric. They sacrifice children to their God. That's his country. That's his people. And if that's not enough, you're sending me to a widow? Don't I have enough problems going on that you're going to send me there to a widow?" You see, in light of today, widows were typically poor. They were typically vulnerable. They weren't usually cared for in the ways we care for them today. There was no inheritance left for them most of the time. There was no life insurance that were going to pay off for them. There was no way for them to sustain themselves in a way that they were going to be able to survive day to day without the reliance of either relatives or the kindness of strangers. So how is she going to feed Elijah is what Elijah's thinking. How is she going to feed Elijah if she can barely feed herself? He's thinking, "I got to go to somewhere else, to a territory that is foreign to me, foreign gods, and a widow who can't even care for herself. How's this going to work?" Nevertheless, he goes. Let's read verse 10 and 12. It says, "So he rose and he went to Zarephath. And when he came to the gate of the city, behold, a widow was there gathering sticks." So far, so good. "And he called her and said, 'Bring me a little water in a vessel that I may drink.' And as she was going to bring it, he called to her and said, 'Bring me a morsel of bread in your hand.' And she said, 'As the Lord your God lives, I have nothing baked, only a handful of flour in a jar and a little oil in a jug. And now I'm gathering a couple of sticks that I may go in and prepare it for myself and my son, that we may eat it and die." Elijah shows up. He finds the widow just as God said, but the widow didn't know why Elijah was there. God said, "I'm going to send you to a widow who's going to feed you," but the widow didn't know that's her job, right? God knew something she didn't yet. He walks up and he sees this poor woman. I want you to, again, imagine this scene. Imagine this woman. Droughts have been going on for a while now, and she's getting to the end of her rope, right? Starving, near death from hunger. Her bones are probably showing through her skin, right? Her face is probably really taut. Her hair probably falling out from lack of nutrition, and she's gathering sticks and dust outside the gate of the town. And as she's doing this, this strange man with a different accent, one she probably recognizes from Israel, shows up. And he asked for water and bread, and she's like, man, you picked the wrong day. You showed up at the wrong time. My son and I are about to have our last meal. I can't give you anything. Her situation seems hopeless. Yet she recognizes there's something different about this man, and she assumes that he worships Yahweh, right? She says, as Yahweh, your God lives. I mean, he's not my God, he's yours. She acknowledges not only that he's his, but that he's living. That Yahweh is a living God, yet she can't see how that could change her death sentence. Yahweh might live, your God may live, but I'm dying, and nothing's going to change that. She's done all she could. She stretched her budget as far as it could go. She's prayed to her God as often as she could. She has begged and borrowed and begged again, and now death is upon her. She was doing the best she could, but she could do nothing else to survive. And I imagine in this moment she was grieving, not just for herself, but not even just for her son that she was going to lose, probably of her husband, who's dead at this point. She probably was thinking back to him and wishing he was still there, and she's about to enjoy this last day on earth with her son, the only thing she has left to love, and she's going to wind up dying in the room with him. That's tragic. That's horrible. I'm sure she's thinking they're going to die, but at least they're going to die together, right? Maybe you can relate to that. Maybe not the dying part, but some of the other pieces she was in. We live in times of plenty, yet just like her, our lives are spent focusing on caring for those closest to us, striving to, in our strength, to make ends meet. Maybe that's you. Maybe that's you as a mom or a dad even, or an aunt or an uncle or relative, whatever. Maybe you're holding together for your family and friends. You're trying to keep everything together. Maybe you support them financially or emotionally or spiritually. Maybe you work two jobs. Maybe you volunteer, go to their games, do everything you can, and still feel like you've come up short at the end of the day. Or maybe you're just super stressed out. Maybe you're maxed out. Maybe you're pulling your hair out, right? Just thinking, how am I going to get through this each and every single week, month after month, as it drags on, right? And maybe you're more like the widow than you realize. Gathering what you can, meagerly distributing it with what little you have, holding it close like she had been holding on to that oil and the flour, never knowing if it might be the last thing you have. And then God shows up and he says, give me a portion of what you have. Give me a portion of what you have. Knowing that when he asked that, that means you might not have enough to feed yourself or the ones you love. Think about it. How many of you would do that? How many of you going to die in the room with your son or relative, the last bit you have, and a man of God shows up and he says, God has sent me and he's asked me for water and bread from you. Before you eat, you need to feed me first. How many of you would do that? I'd wager not many. I would have a hard time. He was asking for a sacrifice because I think most of us, whenever that was asked, would be like, I can't do that, right? I only have so much. I need to keep it all, to keep everything going. If I give up just a little bit of this, I won't have enough to make it. I have to keep it to myself. And we cling to it in the name of survival to keep ourselves alive when actually when we hold it tight like that, whatever it is, our money, our time, our talent, we're actually dying thinking we're trying to keep ourselves alive. Elijah hears the desperation in the woman's voice and I appreciate his response. He isn't callous. He sees the need. He knows the moment why God has sent him to her, and he's just as hungry as she is. He's just as helpless as she is, but he's not as hopeless. That's the difference with Elijah. Verse 13 to 14, Elijah said to her, do not fear. Go and do as I've said. But first, make a little cake of it and bring it to me. And then afterward, make something for yourself and for your son. For thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, the jar of flour shall not be spent, the jug of oil shall not be empty until the day that the Lord sends rain upon the earth. God had sent Elijah there to show her his power. to show her God's power. They may worship Baal, but he isn't in control. Yahweh is. He'll provide for them where their God failed. And in the process, he's going to build up Elijah and this widow's trust in him as he makes this stuff happen, as he makes it work out in their lives. Here's the thing. You may be someone's Elijah today. You may be called to go outside your comfort zone. You may be called to force to even depend on someone who doesn't believe the same things you do. You may be forced to work with, to live alongside someone who doesn't follow Jesus. And God is calling you to a time of refining, as he is here in Elijah, of strengthening your faith, of humbling and using you to bring about a faith in you that others can latch onto, that others can see a difference in. Maybe it's a coworker. Maybe it's a family member you long ago wrote off. Maybe it's a friend who has no other friends. Maybe it's a stranger on the street. Whatever it is, God can and will use your faith to strengthen someone else's. Elijah sees the woman's fear. He hears the call for help. He sees how hopeless it all looks, and he says, "Don't fear. You're not going to die today. You're going to die eventually, but today is not the day. You'll see your son wither away, you think, today, but that's not going to happen because I serve a God who is so great. I serve a God who is living and is active and can provide in ways that no other God, quote unquote, supposedly can. He's going to work something out in this space that you can never have otherwise." God speaks the promise of God to this woman. He speaks against death to assure life. He speaks against exile to assure homecoming. He speaks against her despair to assure her hope, and even against scarcity to announce this lavish abundance that only God can give. You see, the word of the Lord has the power to veto your circumstance and guarantee abundant life. Now, I'm sure the woman, when she's hearing this, she's hearing saying, what do you mean my oil is never going to run out? What do you mean my flour is never going to run out? I have to go to the store to get that. I have to go down to the market, and we have to mill it, and it's got all, I got to trade something for this. How is this going to happen? How is this going to be provided? And Elijah's like, don't you worry about it. You just go and you make the bread. You make the bread. So I'm sure she doubted, but she goes and she obeys anyway. She goes to the house. She burns the sticks that she had gathered. She heats up the oven. She mixes the water and the flour. She pours the last oil in. She starts baking that bread, and she's smelling it cooking one last time. And as it comes out, she doesn't even take a nibble for herself. She doesn't give a piece to her dying son, saying, oh, it won't matter. Let me give a little bit to my son. He won't mind, or he won't even know he's outside. He won't see me give this little bit to my son first. She doesn't cut corners. She fully obeys, and she takes it to Elijah and says, here's the bread you asked for. It's all I got. It is yours. 1 Kings 15 and 16 says, she went and did as Elijah said, and he and her household ate for many days. Verse 16 said, the jar of flour was not spent, neither did the jug of oil become empty, according to the word of the Lord that he spoke by Elijah. As she was obedient, God was faithful to his word. And every day she would go to that same jar, that same jug, and she'd see his faithfulness in action again and again and again. No matter how much she put flour out of that jug and put it to mix it together, every single time she did it, every time she needed more oil, it was always there. She couldn't explain why. She didn't know how. It didn't matter. She knew that she needed it to survive, and it was there every single time. You see, you may be helpless, but by trusting in Jesus, you were never hopeless. Amen. Now, if this were a movie, we'd fade to black. Everybody's happy, right? It's everybody living happily ever after. It's all great and wonderful, but this isn't a movie. This is real life. When things are at their brightest, tragedy tends to strike. And that's exactly what happens here. Verses 17 and 18 says this. After this, the son of the woman, the mistress of the house, became ill. And his illness was so severe that there was no breath left in him. And she said to Elijah, what have you against me, O man of God? You've come to me to bring my sin in remembrance and to cause the death of my son. The widow, as her son is sick and dying, she sees this death of her son as a punishment for something that she's done. Interesting. Maybe she's thinking back to her husband's death and how she was left destitute. Maybe she remembers the time of famine, nearly starving to death, and how God provided them. But now her son is sick, and now her son is dying. Now the last memory of her family is about to completely fade away, and now she's in complete anguish and complete tragedy. These things in her mind aren't accidents, though. These are intentional. It's tied to something she's done in her past. God is punishing her. That's what she feels like. Now, there are consequences to sin, and death is one of them. But the text doesn't give us a hint of what could be the cause. We're not given a reason at all, because that's not the point. You see, we often look to a reason for suffering. We look to a point to the pain, an answer to the why. And rarely when you do that will you find the answers that'll satisfy you. You can try, but rarely ever will you find a satisfying answer. But the text here shows wisdom. You see, the point isn't the tragedy, but what God does through it. It's an opportunity for the true God, not the false one she worshiped, but Yahweh, the God of life and power over death, to show his power and show his authority in her life again. There may be tragedy in your life, and you may be able to pinpoint the reason. You can maybe go back and find, maybe I did something. Maybe something happened that caused this to happen. If you could do that, whatever. But maybe you can't. But the point is, no matter the reason, no matter what's going on, what you have in your moment when tragedy strikes is an opportunity for God to act, which is exactly what he does here. Again, verses 19 through 21 says this. Elijah said to her, "Give me your son." Just like he asked for the bread, he says, "Give me your son." And he took him from her very arms, and carried him up into the upper chamber where he lodged and laid on him his own bed, Elijah's room. He puts him in Elijah's bed. And he cried to the Lord. He said, "Oh Lord, my God, have you brought calamity even upon the widow with whom I sojourn, meaning whom I'm visiting, whom I'm staying with, by killing her son? Have you done this?" And then he stretched himself upon the child three times, and he cried out to the Lord, "O Lord my God, let this child's life come into him again." I'm always amazed by Elijah's response. He doesn't argue with this woman. He doesn't even console her. He doesn't say, "I'm so sorry your son died. I feel so bad for your situation. I really wish there was something I could do." He doesn't do any of that. Instead, he just says, "Hand him to me." And he carries him to his room. He exudes this confidence that I wish I had, man. I really wish I had it like Elijah had it. But I also appreciate the humility, the dependence that he has on God here as well, because you can sense the doubt and question in his tone a little bit here, right? He cries out to the Lord. He doesn't speak. He doesn't whisper. He cries out in anguish. He's like, "What's going on? What's happening here?" Right? And you can hear it in his voice, but what's remarkable as much to me as any of that is that he doesn't cry out, "Why?" Even in his questions for Elijah, there's hope even in the doubt. He says, "Have you killed him?" Now, Elijah's carrying this boy. He knows he's dead. He knows the guy's dead. There's no way. So when he's saying, "Have you killed him?" Of course the guy, he's dead. But he also knows the power of Yahweh. He knows the power of the Lord that raises even the dead to life, right? And so he says, "Have you killed this boy? Have you really done this? Show me who you are. Show me who you are," right? Three times he prays, which one indicates his persistence. He didn't just say, "Lord, heal this boy, raise him to life again," and be like, "Well, that didn't happen. I guess I gotta go back and carry the dead son back to this woman." Three times he goes, which is about persistence, but it's also about completion. We talked about threes a couple of weeks ago, right? But he knew that if God didn't act after three times, he wasn't going to do it. So he lays on him three times. He cries out to God, raise him to life again. And in verse 22, here's what it says. And the Lord listened to the voice of Elijah, and the life of the child came into him again, and he revived. And Elijah took the child and brought him down from the upper chamber into the house and delivered him to his mother. And Elijah said, "See, your son lives." And the woman said to Elijah, now I know that you are a man of God and that the word of the Lord in your mouth is truth. Not the word of your Lord, not the word of your God, the word of the Lord is truth. We don't know how or why God uses the prayers of imperfect people, but he does. Through Elijah's dependence, through his obedience, through his trust, God responded again and again and again to show off his power and authority, and this time snatching life out of the jaws of death with this miracle. How many prayers have we not prayed because they seemed impossible? Think about your life. Don't have to answer out loud. Think about your life. How many prayers have you prayed that you didn't do it? You said, I don't even going to worry bothering God about this. This is impossible. This is not going to happen. How many prayers maybe have you been asked to pray on behalf of someone else and you blow it off because it seems too big? How often do we disappoint those that ask us to pray for them, and how often do we discredit God by our unbelief? It happens. You see, God may be calling you in the midst of someone's struggle, someone's tragedy even, to speak life over death, to be able to cry out to him, to show his power in the midst of a hopeless situation, and to watch as he comes through. He may be calling you to that. You see, God is setting Elijah up for greater things in his life than even raising the dead. It seems crazy to think, but he's calling him to something even greater than that, but he's got to prepare him first. He's got to strengthen his trust. Elijah can't do the greater things God is going to call him to do if he doesn't first go to this widow's house, if he doesn't first go and see a helpless woman, see a hopeless situation, and then pray and watch God respond. He doesn't go on to do the amazing things he's going to do, and we're going to talk about later, if he doesn't see a dead son and hold him in his arms and lay over him three times and say, God, I can't do this, but I know who I serve, and I know you will raise this dead boy to life because I know that's who you are, and I know you're going to come through. I know that just as you've provided oil and the flour for bread, that you are going to raise this child to life again. You are going to bring abundance into this house. You have not sent me to pronounce death over this. You've sent me to pronounce life in the midst of death. I know you. That's what you do. That's who you are. Elijah has to go through this moment to prepare him for something greater, and also opens the widow's eyes in the process, doesn't he? She starts off and she sees Elijah the very first time she meets him, and she said, as the Lord your God lives, right? And she gets to the end of this whole experience after these, however long Elijah's staying, she sees these miracles, and she says, now I know that you are a man of God, and the word of the Lord in your mouth is truth. I know who you serve isn't just some other God, but a God like no other. Now, where did the widow go from here? We don't know. It doesn't say. We're going to find Elijah called again next week as we get into part 3. But she's staying behind. And her life is forever changed, though. She's forever changed by baking bread for him on the day she was about to die. Ladies, the widow said, now I know that the word of the Lord is in that you speak, is in your mouth, is truth. Allow me to speak the word of the Lord over your life today, please. If you haven't already, I encourage you, orient your life around Christ. And I don't mean in word only. I mean, live your life for him in a sacrificial way that you would give him the last piece of bread you have before you feed yourself or your family. I know many of you have sacrificed to not feed yourself and feed your family first, but would you not even give it to your family and give it to God first? I encourage you, stop trying to take on the world. He holds it all in his hands anyway. You don't, thankfully. Give more of your time, give more of your talent, give more of your finances to him than you do your work or you do your partner or you do your kids even, and watch as he gives you back a greater life than you could ever gather for yourself. I encourage you, ladies, be the rock of faith for others, like Elijah was for that widow. God is going to use some of you in unique ways. Your gifts, your talents, your insights, he's given just for you for a specific time, purpose, and reason. And I hope you realize that those gifts, times, and talents, that faith that you may even have isn't to glorify you, it's to glorify him. I pray that you provide for others by prayer and not just extra work. I pray that you invest time in the upper room praising praying crazy prayers over others. And I pray that by your faith, you show them the power of the word of the Lord, that you speak into their lives hope and peace and joy and not anxiety and worry and depression. I pray that you don't just be their rock, but I pray that you point them to the rock. And I pray that you breathe in the breath of life into you first, so that every relationship you engage in, you breathe that right back out, so that those around you who may be dying experience life and life abundant in a way they never have or could before they met you. That's God's word for you as women this morning, for you as mothers this morning, for you as people who are called to be the rock for others by relying on the rock, to speak truth by relying on the truth, by speaking life by being fed by the life. I pray that over your life, your family, you this morning, ladies, as you get ready to go out and serve and love and do all that you do. I'm so amazed by moms. I pray for godly moms. I pray for a generation to be changed of God, of moms who maybe not have grown up godly, but God, change your life in a way where you can be something that you never even thought you could be because I'm working in you even right now. That's my prayer for you this morning. Speaking of prayer, let's get to that this morning. If you're here and you're a seeker, and you're maybe like, oh, I'm a mom or I'm a dad or I'm in between, and I want the power of God in my life. I want to experience life and life abundant, but I haven't experienced it yet. God is still in the raising to life experience. He's still doing that even now. That's his business. That's who he is. And so this morning, if you want to experience that same transformation, being born again, born anew, provided for in a way that you can never be provided for in any other way, you do it by following Jesus, by committing your life to him, by willing to be able to sacrifice and give even your very last piece of bread, your very last piece of money you have in your budget, the very last of everything you have, and sacrificially give it before you keep it to yourself. And watch as he turns everything around because of that. So if you're willing to do that, you want to enter into that relationship today, you do so by praying. You can pray these words or words like these, but pray to him, calling out to him just as Elijah did, and saying, dear Lord, first, please forgive me. God, there's things that I've done. God, there's people I've hurt. There's people I've lost and been hurt by. And God, I need forgiveness. I need your forgiveness. I need your life living in me, making me new so that I have the power to love and forgive someone who's hurt me, to be able to forgive others quickly. God, to see miracles, to be able to know that when I go to my budget at the end of the month, that it's not me who's in charge of it, it's you. That I don't have to go and wonder and worry and fret and fuss over if my kids are going to have enough, but I trust you. That I don't have to hold it all together, not even myself, because you hold me in your hands right now. And today, you're speaking life over me, life over my death, life over my finances, life over my time, life over my talent, in saying, you give me all of you today, and I will give you something greater. I will give you eternal life, life and life abundant. I will transform you to be the best mom, best dad, best brother, sister, aunt, uncle than you ever could be through my power and strength and not your own. Watch as I do crazy, big, miraculous things in your life.